things where I thought there was a risk of anything, but a big risk. And frankly, I just wanted to get some cash. You know, it's always good to have some cash for the next opportunity that comes along. I have to say, in the last couple of weeks, we have been buying pretty aggressively, but we've been very narrowly focused. So, whereas a year ago, you know, we were buying, you know, filling accounts across the board. When I say filling accounts, you know what I mean, but we were buying across the board. In the last couple of weeks, it's been much more focused on our real favorites, because if everything comes down, you may as well add to your favorites, right? And much more in the mid tiers and the juniors, frankly, where I mean, there's just some astonishing buys, I think. Definitely, it wasn't it, meaning the top, like a 2011 or 1980. No question. In my view, I'm 100% convinced this is not the top. Is it an intermediate top? And people forget, you know, in every long bull market, we had pretty significant corrections. 1974, we had a 45% correction in gold, which equated to, didn't have a GDX back there or the XAU even, but equated to probably 80 or 90% decline in the gold stocks. 2011, of course. Well, sorry, 2006, we had a 30% correction in gold. So these big corrections are not unusual, but the risk from leverage in the economy is extremely high. So at that point, when someone, BlackRock, I'm not saying any of this, so I shouldn't name names, but when someone, you know, a big private credit firm needs a bailout, we're going to get a bailout. We're going to get QE, in my view. So we may get QE, which will be looser monetary policy, without a reduction in rates.
Adrian Day, Adrian Day Asset Management. Good afternoon to my friend. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Andy. How are you?
I'm doing great. Even though very briefly, it was great seeing you at PDAC, just running into
Yeah.
you, doing
Well,
some
that was
homework.
brief. That was brief.
We should get coffee next time we see each other.
Yeah,
So I
yeah.
would have enjoyed that. But we were talking just a very little bit off camera here about this run-up that we had in gold, and really silver. I was selling, not, I didn't sell everything, but I was taking some profits into that. And then it just had this enormous, it looked like a parabolic spike, especially in the price of gold. And then we had this correction, and now I'm seeing, I always saw there's deep value, but I'm seeing really deep value again now. Give me your thoughts on that, and where are we at really in the market, the gold market and silver market?
Yeah, well, like you, I was selling in January. Of course, after you have a correction, you realize you've never sold enough, right? And the people that were the clients that were complaining at me for selling anything in January, I said, look, I've sold 10%. You've still got 90%. But we were selling things that I thought had just moved too far too fast, things where I thought there was a risk of anything, but a big risk. And frankly, I just wanted to get some cash. You know, it's always good to have some cash for the next opportunity that comes along. I have to say, in the last couple of weeks, we have been buying pretty aggressively, but we've been very narrowly focused. So, whereas a year ago, you know, we were buying, you know, filling accounts across the board. When I say filling accounts, you know what I mean, but we were buying across the board. In the last couple of weeks, it's been much more focused on our real favorites, because if everything comes down, you may as well add to your favorites, right? And much more in the mid tiers and the juniors. Frankly, where I mean, there's just some astonishing buys, I think.
Yeah, and why is that? Why the mid tiers and the juniors are there astonishing buys?
Well, look, the truth is, okay, so let me, the truth is, I think the seniors are still very good buys. And, you know, we always, all of us, focus too much on price and not enough on value. You look at a company like Agnico. I would say to you, But this is better value today, north of $200, than it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. Just because they've paid down most of their debt, they're now net cash positive. They've the margins, of course, and the free cash flow has just been tremendous. So the multiples, the valuation multiples today are actually lower than they were 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago. But we're already fully loaded in the seniors. And of course, the seniors, by and large, over the last 3 years, the seniors moved as a group much more than did the mid-tiers and the juniors. So if we had a certain allocation for, Agnico and Anglo and Franco and Wheaton, well, we've still got more than that allocation. So we haven't been adding to those. But for a new person, for a new person to the market, if there is anyone out there listening to you and me today who's new to the sector, yeah, I would definitely still buy the best of the seniors. And that means Anglo, I mean, Agnico, Franco, Wheaton. I do like Anglo as well, Royal Gold, Osisko. I mean, I'd definitely be buying. I'd definitely be buying the best of the big tiers. But I just think if you look at the juniors, they really came off a lot more than the big cap stocks. And well, the big cap stocks came off, but then they recovered, of course. The juniors typically haven't had as big a recovery. And of course, they hadn't moved up as much in the first place. So I mean, I think those still represent better value today.
Yeah. You said a couple of things there. One thing I want to pull on a little, you said people, I don't want to use the word upset, but they were disappointed that you were selling into that. And that's typically a sign when people are, they want more. It's typically that's the time to sell. And when they're afraid, that's typically the type to buy, time to buy. Is it, would you subscribe to
Well,
that?
I'm not going to say anything about my clients, but I'll talk about my former clients. No, honestly, the truth is, Andy, in 35 years of managing money for other people, I have had many, many, many occasions where clients will say, no, what, let me back off. I've had many times where people will ask me, why did you sell this? Why did you sell that? I've even had people say, I wired in some additional money yesterday. You haven't invested it yet. People will ask, why did you sell this? Why did you sell that? You never, never get that with a global account. Never. Nobody ever says to me, why did you sell Fever-Tree today? Nobody. But if you sell Newmont, why are you selling gold stocks? And I think it's because, well, there's two things. One is partly rational, and that is, and again, I'm not talking about my current clients because they're all rational. Part of it is rational. I mean, typically, when you open, when you give, when a when somebody gives me money for a gold account, that is a relatively small part of their overall portfolio. So someone may give me, even if they're aggressive, they may give me 20 or 25% of their total portfolio for gold. And so they want that invested in gold. They don't want me to go to cash. Whereas if someone gives me money for a global con a conservative global account, they may indeed give me all of their portfolio. That's one thing. But I think the other thing that we know, we all do it, I do it, you probably do it. I mean, to some extent, we I won't say we treat gold as a religion, but we're always looking out when gold's going to be 5,000 and 10,000 and 20,000. And we're always looking out ahead and, just don't want to miss it. I mean, you have to be an optimist to be in gold, but first of all, that's an optimist on gold, I mean, not an optimist on the world, but an optimist
Right.
on gold. Yeah.
Yeah. No, you really do. I would agree with everything that you just said. But talk to me a little bit more then about what you see happening really through the rest of the year. And I know that's really hard to project, but I get asked a lot, was that it? Was this it? Was that run up? What are your thoughts on all of that?
Well, definitely it wasn't it. meaning the top, like a 2011 or 1980, no question. In my view, I'm 100% convinced this is not the top. Is it an intermediate top? And people forget, you know, in every long bull market, we had pretty significant corrections. 1974, we had a 45% correction in gold, which equated to, didn't have a GDX back there or the XAU even, but equated to probably 80 or 90% decline in the gold stocks. 2011, of course. Well, sorry, 2006, we had a 30% correction in gold. So these big corrections are not unusual, but this is not the top. And I'll explain why I think that in a minute. But when you're looking ahead right now, I mean, obviously the most important factor right now in the near term is the conflict in Iran, its duration, its does it get ex does it extend? And its depth. And by that I mean in terms of depth, does it just get, you know, does Trump bomb civilian power plants? Does Iran bomb desalination plants? So does it get a deeper conflict? Does it extend? You know, so far it's only the US and of course the Gulf states and Saudi Arabia. Well, the Gulf states have said they're willing to join in militarily. So is Uganda, by the way. Uganda said they're willing to go to war against Iran. But is it going to extend? You know, is Turkey, what's Turkey going to do? Are they going to start throwing missiles at European countries? Because they've got the range. So, you know, things like that. And then, of course, the most important thing is the duration. So everything is so uncertain and volatile. And it's not just a little bit volatile. I mean, it's almost from one extreme to the other. You know, we're talking to Iran, we're going to have peace tonight. And then 6 hours later, we're going to destroy the civilization and blow them to smithereens. So it's swinging from one extreme to the other. And frankly, you know, I think it's very difficult to make sensible forecasts or analysis on a particular market until the war has ended or at least, you know, settle down. But beyond that, I think beyond that, my view is quite simple, and that is that the drivers of gold for the last 3 years and increasingly for the last 1 year, those drivers have not gone away. The people that were buying gold and the reasons they were buying gold, central banks, Tether, but other people as well, but primarily central banks and Tether, their reasons for buying have not gone away. And so once things settle down a bit, I think we're just going to resume that path. Now, central bank buying won't be at the same pace. I mean, it can't be. When you've gone from 78% of your foreign reserves in the US dollar in 2000 to 65% in the US dollar 5 years ago to 50% today, you're obviously going to lose some momentum. But has it stopped? I would say absolutely not. If you're a central bank that's concerned about concentration in a single asset, the US dollar, which is the asset of a fiscally profligate government, nothing changed there, but is willing to weaponize its dominance against its enemies and perceived enemies, nothing changed there. I mean, remember all these posts that President Trump is putting out against his allies who haven't joined in. So if you're Spain, are you going to be thinking, oh my gosh, I thought we were safe, but maybe we don't want so many US dollars in our central bank reserves? And it's not just North Korea and China, right, and Russia right now.
So, walk me through this. I would argue, like a higher, and I don't know, I can't tell you what tomorrow the oil price will be. Well, it depends on what comes out of tonight, I guess. That being said, it's like I see oil as inflationary to prices, but deflationary to business. If it's deflationary to business, higher oil prices, let me be clear on that. Wouldn't that, in a deflationary environment that's for business, wouldn't that force the central banks from around the world and specifically the Fed to start printing a lot more money?
Well, it's really interesting, and you're the first person I've heard, maybe someone else, but all of the central banks and all of the sort of quote analysis and governments, but all of the central banks, not just the Fed, but the Fed, the Bank of Canada, the Bank of England, the European Central Bank, the Bank of Japan, they're all talking about pausing cutting rates because of the inflationary impact of a higher oil price, right? Bank of England and European Central Bank are talking about increasing rates to fight inflation. Have these people learned no history? Apart from just thinking about it, as you just did, apart from thinking about what a higher oil price does, apart from the theory, but one price going up is not inflation. You only have inflation if you have an aggregate increase in the price level, and you only get an aggregate increase in the price level if the federal banks are printing money. If they didn't increase the money supply at all and the oil price went up, other prices would have to go down. It's quite simple. The demand for other things would have to go down as well. So, but have they not learned from history? I mean, think about the oil embargo in 1974. That caused the greatest recession in the US since the Great Depression. It caused the gold price to drop 45%. It caused, which we just mentioned, it caused the S&P to collapse. And it's not just that. Think of 1990 when Iraq invaded Kuwait. Oil price shot up. What did we have? We had another recession. We didn't have inflation in 74 or 1990. We had recessions.
Thank you. That's what I'm trying, and I'm one of the few people that are arguing that. I would say high oil prices are deflationary.
Well, there's
Stops
certainly a
business
recession,
going.
yeah, because even though the oil price goes up, unless the Fed prints more money, everything else is going to go down, and the demand and consumption of other things is going to go down. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. And again, history tells us that. So my thinking is, I mean, if you listen to, as I mentioned, all these central banks around the world, the ones I just mentioned, have been talking about no more rate cuts and maybe rate hikes. The ECB said the period of rate cuts is over. Yeah, right. And maybe they will focus on inflation. And that focus will lead us to a recession. And then, of course, we know what happens in a recession. The Fed and other central banks, quote, ride to the rescue with more money. I think we could easily, but it's interesting. You look at the Fed, for example, because we know the Fed more and, we're in America, but, there's been a lot of indications that the Fed is more hawkish now than they were 3 months ago. I mean, first of all, the perception of the investing public has completely changed, right? I mean, in December, people were saying, oh, it's QE forever. It's lower interest rates next year. Trump's going to control the Fed, and then, it's print as much as we want. And the narrative has completely changed at the last press conference after the Fed meeting. Well, first of all, you had the dot plot. And the dot plot, as you know, is where the members of the Fed predict how many what they see for interest rates, GDP, inflation, and so on over different time periods. And the consensus was for one rate cut this year, and more interestingly, in my view, for only one rate cut next year. So they're not looking at this as a short-term pivot because of the war. They're looking at this as a longer-term pivot. Powell, of course, said that he was going to stay on as chairman of the Fed until Warsh was sitting in his chair, had been confirmed, and was ready to sit in his chair. But he would continue as a member of Fed until the DOJ criminal investigation was over. And then beyond that, he hadn't decided yet. But he would definitely stay until those two things had happened. Whoa, suddenly we start to think. Trump only has one person on the Fed. There's only one Trump man on the Fed right now. There were a couple more who were vying for the chairmanship, but now that the chairmanship has gone to Warsh, suddenly they're not Trump men anymore. and I think you know the people I'm talking about, they've gone from extremely dovish to fairly hawkish. And so even when Walsh comes in, there's still only two people on the board. He was trying to get rid of Powell, trying to get rid of Cook. Those haven't gone quite as smoothly as he anticipated. So anyway, to cut the story short, Trump clearly doesn't control the Fed. And then you just look at the Fed meet, the last meet, the meetings of the last Fed meeting, which was, of course, before the bombing, before the conflict started. But before that, I would say it's absolutely accurate to say that more members of the Fed were more concerned about the risk of inflation than they were to the risk of recession. I'm not arguing now whether they're right or wrong. I'm just saying that the whole mood of the Fed has completely changed from being very dovish to being quite hawkish. What I suspect will happen, Andy, I said we were going to get QE. You remember, back in a year ago, I said we were going to get QE before the end of the year, and we got it. It was the famous not QE, QE, remember? They started QE, but went out of their way to tell everybody this was not QE. We're just printing a bunch more money and putting it into
Which
the.
means it's
That's not
QE.
QE. And one person, I forget who it was now, I wish I could remember, but when he was asked, he actually said this: well, it's not QE because we say it's not QE. Anyway, but it's 40 billion a month until, and it ends this month, right? I suspect we're going to see that get larger and get extended. If not this month, but within a month or two, I think we'll be having a more QE. And the biggest reason for that, frankly, is because of a risk to the private equity market, private credit market, real estate, and so on. Leverage loans, as we all know, Jamie Dimon of JP Morgan talked about it in a letter just yesterday. I mean, he's mentioned it before, but he talked about it just yesterday. But the risk from leverage in the economy is extremely high. So at that point, when someone, BlackRock, I'm not saying any of this, so I shouldn't name names, but when someone, a big private credit firm needs a bailout, we're going to get a bailout. We're going to get QE, in my view. So we may get QE, which will be looser monetary policy without a reduction in rates. That may be the next step.
So another question I have is, let's make some assumptions here that oil or the economy, for whatever reason, is leading into a recession here. And I think the probability is actually quite high with oil being where it is currently. Do you then, and all everything that you just said about the Fed and your expectation that we're going to get QE, do you expect then the Fed to how do I say this? Maybe not cut rates. And you already said this, but I just want to ask the question again. Do you believe that they're going to flood the markets with money?
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll get lower rates by the end of the year. I mean, that would be something I would be willing to bet my money on. It's not 100% conviction, but I'm reasonably certain on that. But I think we might get QE before we get lower rates. But of course, the thing with the oil price, an awful lot depends on the war, right? On the conflict, the extension, the how long it lasts, the duration of the war, and what infrastructure is destroyed in the meantime. If the war were to end tonight, if it were to end tonight,
God help us. Please, please end it tonight. But go ahead.
there's about 9 million barrels of oil that is sitting in Kuwait ready to be shipped. So that's immediate relief to the market. Secondly, just the mere fact that the war ends means people don't see the need to stockpile. And so they start using those stockpiles. So they start destocking. And so that will bring the price down in and of itself. But the 9 million barrels of Kuwait has ready to ship, that's not a long time, but it helps. And if the Strait of Hormuz is open, then oil starts flowing again. So the point I'm making is a very quick end to this war. without a lot more damage to oil facilities and refining capacity and so on in the Middle East, what will the oil price do? Probably won't go back to 60 because I think it was ridiculously undervalued then, and now people understand there is a huge risk. But will it go to 70, 75, maybe 80? But even if it goes to 80 from 120, the oil stocks fall dramatically at that point.
And then it'll be a time to, if they do, if and when they do, that'll be the time to have you on the show and talk about oil stocks, right?
Oil's difficult because, I mean, 6 months ago, a year ago, and in fact, a speech of PDAC, not PDAC, VREQ, sorry, in January, I said that oil was the most undervalued
I would
commodity
agree with
out
that.
there,
I would agree.
other than perhaps coal. But forget coal for a minute, but other than that, it was the most undervalued. It was the most hated, et cetera, et cetera. We could talk more about it if you want, but I think everybody knows. And yet, despite it being the most undervalued commodity, the oil stocks really didn't reflect that extreme level of undervaluation, in my view.
Yeah,
And
you're
part of
right.
the reason for that was that for the last 6 months now, not just for the last month, as there's the last, not just in January, not just in February, rather, as there was speculation about a conflict in Iran. Let's not forget we had that huge run-up in January, then we had the decline, and then we had the other run-up on which was on speculation of the conflict. But the oil stocks were moving up 6 months ago, and the reason they were moving up, in my view, was partly because there were some people who were beginning to focus on oil, and oil stocks, but I think more importantly, it was because the oil companies who had been told for years that within a decade their product would be obsolete and nobody would want it anymore. The oil companies have been told by Europe, many European funds, we won't invest in you because you're dirty. Until President Trump came in, a lot of banks wouldn't lend money to oil companies because they're dirty. Well, what do those companies do? Do they spend millions and billions of dollars looking for new oil? Or do they buy back shares and increase their dividends, which is what an awful lot of them did. And so by buying back shares and increasing dividends, albeit at the cost of your long-term real business, the stocks were looking pretty attractive. And so people were buying them and the stocks were moving up. As I say, even though these companies were not reinvesting in their own businesses. So they weren't that particularly cheap, in my view. And so when we had the oil price spike like that, I was actually selling. We still own some, but I was actually selling a lot more than I was buying oil stocks.
Well said. I love your mind and the way you think. And it's not just because you agree with me. I wish you would actually disagree with me. So maybe tell me that we're not going in recession or something. But Adrian, I want to be very conscientious of your time. You're a friend of the show, but if people want to do business with you, if they are looking for a money manager, how do they get in touch with you and how do they do business with you?
Yeah, well, the website is adrianday.com. That's easy. And that'll take you either to the newsletter or to the money management. And on the money management, Andy, thanks for asking. I mean, we cater a lot to, retail investors. We don't really have a hard and fast minimum. It's whatever really makes sense for the person, right? So I don't want someone with $100 million giving me 20,000 to invest in junior gold stocks. But conversely, I mean, we took a guy 2 years ago who just graduated from college. He promised, if you open my account, I will give you a cut of my paycheck every month. So we opened the account with, like, I think it was $10,000. And he did. He just adds to it every month. Well, that's when I say a good client, sorry, that's irrational. And we'll go with that. So we don't have a minimum. Our accounts tend to be personalized in the sense we don't manage to a model, let's put it that way. So a person can say, I want gold, but I really want to focus on the juniors. A person can say, I want gold, but I only want juniors. I only want seniors, you know, whatever. And we'll to you know to the best of our ability, we'll go along with people's personalization.
Excellent. I'll put a link to your site in the show notes, both on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Adrian, it's been too long. Need you on the show more. I love enjoying my time with you. And yeah, let's get you on again real soon.
Well, thank you so much, Andy, and thank you, everyone.